Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, this weekend, the new film, An Inconvenient Sequel, Truth to Power, hits select theaters in Chicago. It's a follow-up to the groundbreaking documentary, An Inconvenient Truth. That movie, of course, starred former Vice President Al Gore and introduced the mainstream world to the rising threat of climate change.
If you look at the 10 hottest years ever measured, they've all occurred in the last 14 years. And the hottest of all was 2005. Scientific consensus is that we are causing global warming. I am Al Gore. I used to be the next president of the United States of America. This is really not a political issue so much as a moral issue. Temperature increases are taking place all over the world, and that's causing stronger storms. Is it possible that we should prepare against other threats besides terrorists? We have to act together to solve this global crisis. Our ability to live is what is at stake.
An Inconvenient Sequel picks up the story 10-plus years later, and as you can guess, climate change is even more dire. Bigger storms, droughts, and rises in temperatures are the norm now. So what's being done to fight this? Well, this film follows Al Gore as he continues his life mission to educate the world to the man-made threats to our planet. And the documentary chronicles Gore's attempts to bring the world leaders together under one understood principle. We have to make a change. The directors of the film are Bonnie Cohen and John Schenck, and they are in studio with me tonight at the big table. You guys, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So let's talk. Why do we need a sequel on this? That Inconvenient Truth came out, and it stunned us. It grabbed our attention. Why do we need to make a follow-up 10-plus years later?
Well, when Bonnie and I got a call from Participant Media, which is this incredible company in California run by Jeff Skoll, his head of documentary, Diane Weirman, called us, and we thought, oh my gosh, how could we possibly follow up that film? It was incredible. It was a lightning rod. It really gave us the language to even have this conversation that we're having right now. But we went to Nashville, and we sat down with Al Gore, and he gave us the 10-hour version of his slideshow, updated. And we learned a ton, not the least of which is that we have this incredible bucket of solutions now that didn't exist 10 years ago. The cost of solar and wind has plummeted to the point where it's cheaper than burning fossil fuels to get electricity in many parts of the world. And then we also really were just taken with Al's passion. He really hasn't missed a beat. The guy is like the Energizer Bunny. And we pitched the idea of doing a behind-the-scenes kind of fly-on-the-wall film, and that's what we did.
Bonnie, what did you know about Inconvenient Truth? Obviously, a huge movie that everybody, pretty much everybody has seen. Before you got into this project, was the same style or same thought that, hey, this has been done already?
Well, we knew we had to do something different. You know, that was a seminal film for so many people. I mean, you know, as John said, it was a lightning rod. Everyone saw that film. It may have been the most impactful social issue documentary ever. So, pretty daunting as filmmakers to follow on the heels of that. So we chose to do something pretty different. And we thought that as we conceived of the idea as we were listening to Al Gore talk about all the work that he does, that, you know, wouldn't it be interesting to go behind the scenes with him as he kind of makes the sausage, if you will, and, be in rooms where he's meeting with political leaders, go and see when he meets with survivors of horrible storms, when he trains climate trainees, all of that, going to Greenland to talk to the scientists. You know, we thought that we also had the opportunity, as John said, to bring some optimism to this. You know, this actually, if you can believe it, is a hopeful film. Yes, the climate crisis has gotten a lot worse, but there is so much that is being done already that we can do about it. So we felt like we had to jump in because of that.
A tremendous time to document. Because the lead up to the Paris Accords, when this is happening, there seems to be, you're at this moment where climate change is in the ether. It is what people want to talk about. The world leaders are turning their attention to it. And you have this opportunity to be a fly on the wall as a former vice president gets to talk to prime ministers, to heads of state, to other about the issues that affect countries in a very direct, I thought, very frank way. I really, really enjoyed to watch the dialogue between the vice president and the Indian delegation was very fascinating. How much did you know you were going to get? Is it a classic documentary where you're like, we'll just go for the ride? Or did
it's
you
always
know?
A fishing mission.
Yeah. Us documentary filmmakers who do observational type shooting, we can never have enough. You know, we're just sort of always asking for more access. Al was incredibly accommodating. He really worked with us to try to get us whatever access we were asking for, and he was very generous with his time. The thing that was amazing to us is, you know, who would have thunk it? But actually solving climate change turns out to be really dramatic. And there's a lot of kind of high tension behind the scenes, you know, where these conversations are going on. When you're talking about countries of the world coming together to try to solve this most complex issue of our time, it's really an emotionally intense thing that goes on. In fact, it kind of feels like a political thriller once it gets to Paris. The thing that's really changed, though, that kind of gets to the heart of your question is that I think for a long, long time, for those who cared about the environment and wanted to do something positive in this arena, it's felt very difficult to convince people at an emotional level how important it is. It always felt like something far off in the distance that would happen to other people. That's really changed. Everyday people all around the world are noticing that things are weird. The climate is, you know, the weather is odd. Rain bombs, droughts, wildfires, sea level rise to the point where it's coming into our streets in Miami, Florida. So it's become a kind of, you know, what you might call the great social issue of our time, and people want to solve it. And that's partly what you feel in the film, is there's this emotional intensity underlying the scenes there.
Yeah, and I always, it's fascinating to me watching the film, the characters that emerge, because I think in this country we sometimes are fed a stereotype character of another country's leader, that they are the ones that are causing the trouble, and they don't want to necessarily change their country's direction when it comes to climate change. And, well, you know, we do here, Barack Obama does in this country, but everybody else doesn't. But that wasn't necessarily the case. You saw Prime Minister in China or others that were wanted to take leadership roles in recognizing that this was a serious issue, not just for their country, but for the world.
Well, and the truth is that this climate conference falls in a long line of history of other climate conferences that, you know, where we've tried to come together as a group of nations to do the right thing, and it's always failed. This was the first time. It was so significant. Paris was a moment for the world community that where we came together and all said, look, we're going to take this seriously. Maybe the agreement isn't quite enough, but at least it's a landmark agreement that we can all rally around and kind of work towards to start to make the change, which is a signal that everyone's taking it seriously now. So when Donald Trump made the decision to pull out in June of this year, it really was devastating for those of us that were there, certainly for people in the movement who have been working on this for so long. And, you know, so we have to think about other ways to fight.
Did you approach this from we're curious filmmakers, don't know much about climate change? Or was this more a passion play for both of you to say, this is something that's important to us, we know this topic well, and we're going to go with Vice President Al Gore and try to make the best climate change film we can?
You know, it's funny. Us documentary filmmakers are sort of a funny combination of, you know, we're storytellers first, really. We're filmmakers. That's our training. We want to tell dramatic stories that move people. And, you know, we want people to laugh and cry and do all the things that great movies do. On the other hand, we really are resolute about our sticking to the truth of the matter. And we, you know, everything that goes into our film, we want it to be unassailable. We triple check facts and we do things that journalists do as well. The key here is that we had an incredible leading man. You know, you think about Al Gore's life. He's 69 years old now. He was elected to the House of Representatives in the 70s. Mm-hmm. He's been really fighting this issue since then, when he realized that nobody else was taking up the cause in Congress. And so his perspective is really amazing. Of course, he had the tragic defeat in the year 2000, where from his perspective, he had been kind of training all his life for this job. His father was also a senator, and then he lost by one vote in the Supreme Court. And yet, he picked himself up out of the ashes of that and created this whole new career for himself. And in a way, it becomes kind of a metaphor for the climate, for the planet. You know, we are in this really kind of devastating, you know, critical moment right now in our environmental history. We need to act. We need to pick ourselves up out of the ashes of this moment and move towards these solutions. It's the most complex challenge we've faced, but we have to kind of look despair in the face and be hopeful regardless.
Is the main character of this film Vice President Al Gore, or is it climate change?
You know, I think the characters are Al Gore, Mother Earth, and, you know, there's also a whole other character, which is the user-generated video, which is all through the film, coming from all kinds of people from around the world who are experiencing the change in the climate. And so, you know, you have a climate activist, you've got Mother Earth who's screaming, you know, with her all of her voice now, and then you've got world citizens who are capturing what's happening to their communities and sending them in. There, we found so many of them on YouTube. You know, devastation from floods or droughts, etc. You know, there's some incredible images of the streets melting in India, and people are walking through, and people are noticing and recording, and this is something that we have to stand up and take notice of as well.
The directors of An Inconvenient Sequel, Truth to Power, are in studio. Bonnie Cohen and John Shank. An Inconvenient Sequel, Truth to Power, comes out in theaters this weekend. Select theaters here in Chicago and the suburbs. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue our conversation here at the big table. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guests, the directors of the film An Inconvenient Sequel, Truth to Power, Bonnie Cohen and John Shank. They're my guests tonight at the big table. We're talking climate change and the film that hits theaters this weekend, both here in Chicago and the suburbs. I really enjoyed the film, and I enjoyed the fact that it wasn't as a hit over the head type documentary. Some of the criticism for An Inconvenient Truth was the idea that we're doomed. And as you mentioned, this was a little bit more hopeful. And I thought, and I want to draw out this, well, the one scene when we talk again about the Indian delegation, the argument that they made about the fact that they want to put coal plants in because they're a developing country and they finally have the resources to do so. And they look to the United States and say, for 150 years, you got to do whatever you wanted. You got to ruin the planet. We want our 150 years to ruin the planet. And there's something about, I don't know, watching it and being a viewer, I'm like, they kind of have a point. There was something about that being able to resonate. It wasn't an ignorant argument that was being made. And that's what I appreciated, too, about the film.
Yeah, you know, Al went to India before the Paris negotiations to try to understand where the Indians were coming from. You know, from the developing world's point of view, and India being one of the, you know, largest developing countries in the world, it comes down to the fact that they want to pull their people out of poverty. Who doesn't want to do that? They want to build schools. They want to build factories. They want to give people work. That requires electricity. It requires transportation. It requires all the things that we enjoy in our country.
And for a long time, they didn't have those things.
Absolutely. Right. And so when they put it in those terms, it's sort of easy to see the world from their perspective. The thing that Al does a good job at in the film is he's able to, and that's basically what I just said is the argument that's been going on in the UN since the early 90s. You know, look, we're not going to pay for it. We're poor countries. The rich countries say, well, we don't want to pay for it. Why should we help you? What Al does is he's able to take his knowledge of what's going on in the solar and wind and other alternative energy industries, plus his knowledge about banking and financing, and explain to the Indians that this can be a win-win. You can leapfrog these old technologies that, by the way, pollute your air and cause New Delhi and Mumbai to be the most polluted cities in the world. You can put in this new type of energy, bring your people out of poverty, improve your economy, and leapfrog the dirty energy that the United States and other countries have used. And so you see him making that point, and you're right, in the film it gets quite a heated debate because passions run high when it comes to solving these kinds of major problems in the world.
But it's awesome as a viewer just to be able to see that happen, you know, with such powerful people in a room not being guarded necessarily because a camera's on.
Right.
Yeah. How do you do that as documentary filmmakers to be able to capture that? Because I would assume in your line of work that there have been times where you think you're going to get something great and they recognize the camera's on and they go right back to talking points.
I think if you stick around long enough on the fishing mission, things start to bear fruit. You know, I mix my metaphors there, but you know what I mean. You know, we were with Al Gore a lot of the time, and he actually got what we were going for. He understood that if we captured the authenticity of these scenes, that it could go such a long way to bring viewers on board and feel like they were experiencing the truth of the matter. And he really helped us in that case in India, as you describe. You know, those ministers didn't necessarily want to be on camera, but they went along with it, partially because Al Gore is such an important figure in the climate movement. So we really did, the narrative of the film really now is a reflection of where the strongholds were in Al Gore's work during the year 2015, 2016, when we were covering him. You know, some people say, well, why did you spend so much time in Paris? We spent a lot of time in Paris because Al Gore's role developed in Paris into something really meaningful, which even he didn't know what it was going to be going in. So that's the kind of film this is. We went with what the world events gave to us. And I think it's a very good excellent reflection of the kind of work that this man is willing to do on behalf of the planet.
For you to be working on this project in such an important year, 2016, not only the Paris Accords, but also the 2016 election and a Republican primary, which you reference, and even Donald Trump and others, but just essentially railing against. I mean, there's a line that at time candidate Donald Trump says, I wish the president would come back from Paris, doesn't need to be there. He's got other things that are more important, like fighting ISIS. It became a campaign issue in the way that we shouldn't be wasting our time with trying to come together on climate change. So the idea of being a part of not only what was happening in Paris, but documenting at the time, it's almost a perfect flashpoint.
The 2016 campaign was playing, I mean, you talk about major characters in the film. I would say the 2016 campaign played kind of a minor role. It's kind of always lurking in the background, and because Al is in his
foreshadowed too, right?
Yeah, he's sort of in his post-political life, but he's still a consumer of the news, so it's always on the television.
And they want it every interview that you guys are in. They want to talk about what's happening.
That's
with the election.
Everyone wants to know what he thinks of what he thought of the Republican playing field, etc. So it's kind of lurking in the background all the time, and there's this kind of low-level tension that is attached to it because the fear is that, my God, what if one of these candidates actually becomes president? Then we really have a problem with the climate crisis.
The other thing is, you know, aren't we all tired of kind of the way that we hear the noise from cable news now? It's just like it all just kind of feels like the same song that's playing over and over again. You turn on the TV, it almost doesn't matter what the issue is. It's sort of packaged in this way, and people opinionate about
it. It's easy to be background.
And the nice thing about the thing that we have the luxury to do with these longer form documentaries is let it sink in. You're not just reporting on Paris in this film. You're actually there. You're in the room. You're watching things happen. It humanizes it. And so you're able to see how silly Donald Trump's statements are about, you know, Paris not being important and it shouldn't be a priority for
when
the president.
Every world leader in the
has
entire
committed
planet
a week
is
to
there.
They're not only there, but passions are running high, and you get to know the intricacies of what's being debated there and how important it is for the future of human civilization. Obviously, it's of utmost importance. So when you see Trump say that soundbitey kind of cable news stuff that he does, that the campaign is all about, then it just kind of puts that into perspective, and you're able to kind of just enjoy in this film, you know, kind of a thoughtful approach where you're able to kind of breathe and allow it to wash over you.
The former vice president is a polarizing figure in politics. Mm. Like you said, he lost by one Supreme Court vote to be president of the United States. He's a figurehead for the Democratic Party in this country, always has been, from being vice president under Clinton. And now with this issue is beyond politics, yet because it's a political figure that is really at the forefront, do you run the risk of it being polarizing or political, even though that's not necessarily the outcome?
You do run the risk because of Al Gore's history, certainly, and what people think they know about him and who he is and what he stands for. But if we can get people into the theaters to sit down and listen and experience, I think, you know, the Al Gore that you meet in this film is in a post-political life. He's made a decision to, as he talks about in the film, he's a recovering politician.
Right.
And he has committed himself to this new career as a climate activist. And I think no matter where you sit on the political spectrum, his passion is rather contagious. And, you know, the fact that he offers solutions, he's not just banging a drum about how awful it all is and what we've all done to the planet. It's not a paralyzed with fear kind of film, although things are bad. You don't leave the film feeling like there's nothing that you can do. So his offering up of solutions, I think, puts him in a different category in this film.
Why don't we do this? I want to take a break. We'll get tonight's news. I want to come back. We'll continue that conversation because it's very interesting because The Inconvenient Truth, as much as that was shocking and stunning, there were almost parodies of it. You know, the documentaries that came out after the fact that were all about how Al Gore is a liberal liar. And it almost sparked, if you will, the climate change denying movement. But we'll continue this conversation.
Sure.
Bonnie Cohen, John Shank, the directors of An Inconvenient Sequel, Truth to Power, picking up where An Inconvenient Truth left off 10-plus years ago. It's in theaters this weekend in the Chicago area. We'll take a quick break for the news. We'll come back. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me tonight, the directors of the film An Inconvenient Sequel, Truth to Power, Bonnie Cohen and John Shank, are here. The film hits the Chicago theaters this weekend, both here in the suburbs. It really picks up a story that was told, An Inconvenient Truth, about 10-plus years ago. And right before the break, we were talking about Al Gore and being a polarizing figure. And you know, it's true to be told, when you see him in this role, he goes out of his way to avoid that stigma. You know, he's not pushing an agenda. It's climate, climate, climate. When he's asked about politics, he does a good job of like kind of pushing it to the side. Mm-hmm. But again, as we mentioned, John, I mean, right before the break, we're talking, there were climate change deniers. The movement came out of Inconvenient Truth. 10-plus years ago, this became almost a rallying cry for people who didn't want to believe in this.
Well, you know, Justin, the fact is that the truth of the matter, the scientific, you know, unassailable truth of climate change, whatever you want to call it, it's the, you know, scientists studying the complex system of our planet and how it's being changed by greenhouse gases that we're polluting the atmosphere with, is a real threat to the fossil fuel companies. And it's not so much that Inconvenient Truth started a denier movement. What happened really is that the fossil fuel companies got really scared about their bottom line. And they took a page, unfortunately, out of the tobacco industry's playbook. You know, the tobacco industry, once it came out, you know, in the middle of last century that tobacco smoke could cause lung cancer and heart disease and kill people, the tobacco industry didn't take that line down. They hired actors to play doctors on TV to say tobacco smoke is not unhealthy. And 100 million people have died because of that. That's what we're in the middle of right now with the climate crisis. We have these companies whose bottom lines are threatened by the simple fact of the climate crisis. And by the way, the solutions to the climate crisis, which are going to lead the world towards sustainable energy. And Al Gore was kind of, maybe you could call him the unfortunate figurehead, and he became the punching bag for those deniers. But in our minds, we're, you know, we show some of that in the film. It's actually, we show some of these denier voices and just how ludicrous it got, these statements about, you know, about Al Gore being likened to Nazi propaganda films and the like. It's just ridiculous. But, you know, on the flip side, the cool thing about Al now is that you see him, he doesn't care about party anymore. In the film, he goes to Texas where he meets a conservative Republican mayor who's taken his town of 65,000 people carbon neutral using wind turbines and solar power. It's kind of fun because he goes and they agree about the solutions. They're from opposite sides. This guy's a Trump supporter. Gore was, as you said, a lifelong Democrat. But in a way, it doesn't matter now. This issue should never have been political, and I think we're finally getting to a point where it's coming out of politics and more into the mainstream.
Well, I mean, it is interesting because in this film, I feel it's less about trying to convince people that climate change is real and more telling the story about how the world leaders get together to try and make a change. That's kind of the takeaway. I felt halfway through the film, the real lead-up was to the Paris meetings and how there have been failures before, but we were going to see how this was going to change and how Al Gore kind of played it out. So less about, like, when I think of Inconvenient Truth, that was all eye-opening. And I think since that time, we've seen, as you've mentioned, I mean, cable news, I think a great episode on Vice, others about climate change. Those images of watching the glacier disappear, the images of big storms, and they are one after another are flashed in front of our eyes. Do you run the risk of being desensitized, where people are like, yeah, I knew, I saw that the stuff from the storm in the Philippines. I saw the material. I saw what happened in Miami Beach. I saw it on the news. I saw it on CNN. I don't need to be reminded of it. The Inconvenient Truth was an eye opener of stuff that we never knew. Do you run the risk of people being saw that?
I mean, I think we have such media saturation in our lives at this point that, you know, we think we know and we think we've seen everything. The great value of documentary is that, you know, for 90 minutes, you have to sit in a dark theater and someone is going to tell you a story and they're going to connect dots for you. They're going to connect dots between what's happening in the natural world and what's happening in your world. And, you know, you might think that you've seen the glaciers calving, but I'm not sure that you've seen them with Al Gore standing at the foot of them, or that you see the rushing water going out to the ocean. And then the next shot is that where does that water end up? It ends up on the streets of Miami Beach, Florida. There are connections that we as filmmakers can make for the viewer that they may not be able to do by themselves. So you may think you know, you may think that you've seen it before, but that isn't really the case. Plus, I think where we are now, as I was saying earlier, these user-generated videos play such a role in, you know, bringing the emotional experience.
The visuals in the Philippines were tremendous.
People from around the world who are having, you know, are having to punch through the ceiling of a hotel so that they can get to high enough ground so that they don't drown in the seawater that's taking over the building. this is stuff that looks like maybe computer graphics might have generated, but in fact, people are recording it on their iPhones and their cell phones. So our job in this film was to take these images, these somewhat awful images, and connect them, for example, to the refugee crisis in Syria, to connect them to, you know, food shortages in Africa, to connect them to Zika virus taking over and moving further north into the United States.
Absolutely, yeah.
These are the kinds of connections that I'm not sure people are making, and we need to understand the climate crisis.
What surprised you guys? Knowing going into it, I mean, you're going to shoot footage of the vice president on the on the actual glacier, you know, or the area. You know that's going to happen. And when you get up there, is it surprising to see the stuff? Is it surprising to see the water situation in Miami Beach? Surprising to see, in some cases, things that you knew you were going into, but when you were there with the cameras?
You know,
it's pretty emotional.
Going to Greenland with Al Gore was really an incredible emotional roller coaster. First of all, going to Greenland at all, you know, you're going to one of the wonders of the world. It's absolutely gorgeous there with these incredible ice sheets set off against this crystal ocean water that's beneath them. But you're looking at it and you're realizing, wait a minute, there's something wrong here. This is melting fast. There's ice water rivers on top of the ice that didn't exist before with the ferocity that they now exist. And then, of course, we're there with a man who's been trying to stop this his entire life. So there's this human emotional component as well. So many times in this project, be it in Greenland, be it on the streets of Miami, or in the Philippines after the hurricane hit there. You know, these hurricanes travel over oceans that are now much warmer because of global temperature rise, and they're picking up more steam. And like in Sandy in New York or in the Philippines with Haiyan, they hit and just devastate like they've never done before. And so you got to brace yourself for that. The flip side, though, I have to say, we were just as taken aback in a positive way by just how amazing the technology and innovation is going on in the alternative energy world. And if you had asked me, do we have the tools in hand before we had made this film, I would have shrugged my shoulders. I didn't know. But now I have a clear understanding that they exist. Cities are choosing them. By the way, they can save our economy because the fastest growing jobs are now in solar and wind.
Mayors and governors are all standing up around this country and saying, we want that for our city and our state.
And so does it just come down to a really strong lobby for the fossil fuel industry? What's stopping a governor, say, in the state of Illinois or others that haven't made that transition yet from doing so?
Nothing stopping Jerry Brown or in California or Andrew Cuomo in New York. I mean, there's days in California now where up to 70% of the electricity generated is from renewable resources. Hawaii is moving rapidly in that direction. I think, you know, despite the person that we have in the White House, obviously the president is an important person, but despite that, the views that are coming out of the White House, our country is moving fast in the direction of renewables. CEOs of major corporations like Apple and Google are now taking their companies 100% renewable because they know that their customers want that. It's smart, it's green, but also it saves them money in the long run.
Right.
So we're hoping that people can come to the film and certainly see the danger of where we are in terms of the climate, but also really get it in a very clear way that we have this choice now.
You know, what's so hard about it is that I think the film does a really great job of not being political. You know, an issue like you just said that shouldn't be. But the real world consequence of politics shows its head in the fact that Donald Trump has removed the U.S. from the Paris Accord, this storyline that we had a better understanding by watching your movie. I mean, watching up to that point, you're like, everybody who watches the film, you're watching these people come together in such an emotional way. In the back of your mind, you know that the United States has already pulled out of this in dramatic political fashion. As filmmakers, as you're putting your film together and you're using that and you spend all that time together, is it a letdown? Is it emotional for you to spend that much time on a project and be able to tell that story, to have it end up the way it's ended up?
It was incredibly emotional for us and for Al Gore when Trump pulled out of Paris. You know, he, as you see in the film, you know, Al goes and makes a plea to Donald Trump. He met with him actually a couple of times to talk to him about Paris and actually thought there was potentially a 50-50 chance that he would not pull out. So he was rather shocked and devastated as well when he pulled out of the agreement. The truth is that the way that the agreement is constructed, the reality of actually, quote unquote, pulling the United States out, what it means in real terms, because of the way that the commitments are outlined, you can't actually facilitate that until the first day that the next president is in office in the United States. So it's going to take a very long time. He said it in words, but to actually facilitate it and have real consequences of it, we're years down the line. And in those years, we're going to see more and more mayors and governors and citizens of this country holding to the commitments that we made as a country in Paris.
And that's great. And there's also power in rhetoric. And we saw that a little bit with you're really trying to get the Indian government and delegation to think about the words that they choose and how they talk about the issues that are in front of them. Do you run the risk, even though you're right, it's a little disingenuous, the idea of pulling out of anything when you really don't have the it's going to take years to do so. But there's a political agenda to that. There's a message being sent. Do you run the risk of undoing work and agreement and this idea that there's this mass understanding of what's happening to us with political rhetoric?
Of course. I mean, elections, what do they say? Elections have results and consequences. And it's all the more reason we need to be vigilant. We need to know what the real truth is, both on the danger of the climate side, but also on the solution side. And we all need to take responsibility. You know, since Paris, the amazing thing is one of Al's fears was that after Trump pulled out, is would other countries use this as cover to pull out as well?
Because
there's other countries out there that seem reluctant
as well.
That just
kind of went along with
it.
Right.
But the opposite there happened too. You know, no other country has pulled out, first of all. And many of the countries have doubled down and actually as if to say, we'll show you, Donald Trump, how much we care about this issue. Partly because they do care about this issue and they do want a better planet for their citizens. But also, countries are starting to realize the huge economic gains in this. So, you know, for example, Donald Trump says he wants to bring back coal. Well, guess what? Coal jobs aren't coming back. That's antiquated technology. What is coming is hundreds of thousands of new jobs in solar and wind. And if we can get those factories into Kentucky and West Virginia and the places that used to have coal mines, there's incredible economic upside. So we're hoping that the film can play a role that can be kind of a dose of truth about this topic. And, you know, this happens in our country. We're a country that once had legal slavery. We're a country that once had legal segregation. We're a country in which women didn't vote. All those social issues came to the foreground. Truth was spoken about it time and time again. It seemed impossible. And then ultimately we flipped and we did the right thing. The climate crisis is the social issue of our time. It's affecting everybody on the planet. It's affecting our country. People are waking up. It's become an emotional topic. Al Gore describes it as the great issue of our time. And we're in agreement. We need to get our act together and do the right thing on this.
Do you have a different outlook on this issue after spending this much time on An Inconvenient Sequel?
John and I have always been pretty really committed to the environment. We've made other films that have to do with climate change. We learned a lot. We discovered so much about the sustainability revolution. And we, you know, if nothing else, we were able to feel more hopeful at a very dark time politically in our country. So we are grateful for that. And we just hope that we can start to move quickly.
The directors of the film, An Inconvenient Sequel, Truth to Power, Bonnie Cohen and John Shank, thank you guys so much for being in studio tonight. We really appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.